Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 98 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and what she wears when she's writing novels. That's what we're talking about today. Before we begin this episode, just know it's made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, please go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder, hop on over to iTunes after the episode and rate and review us, because I read these and I so welcome your thoughts. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
Ah, you know, I was reading the New York Times, and there was this lovely article about legendary authors and the clothes they wore. What a twist. I couldn't wait to read this, mostly because, hey, guess what? I may not be legendary yet, but I am a writer, three times New York Times bestseller. And so I said to myself, well, now, I never thought about the clothes I wore and what that really says about me. So who better to write this book called Legendary Authors and the Clothes They Wore than Terry Newman, who is our wonderful guest today, calling in from the United Kingdom. And she's worked in the fashion industry for more than 25 years, both as an editor and a writer. She's also written and presented fashion programs in the United Kingdom for Channel 4. These are the shows She's Gotta Have It. A contributor to books such as ID's Fashion Now, Fashion Now 2, and Soul ID, she currently lectures at the University for the Creative Arts in Epsom, England. She lives in London with her husband and two children. Terry, welcome to the Her podcast.
Oh, thank you very much for inviting me. Lovely to speak to you.
Well, I'm just going to tell you, I just went nuts over this book. Thank you for gifting me with a copy. I mean, now I'm holding on to it really tightly. And I'm learning so much about so many of my writing predecessors, male and female. You know, in 1984, Diana Vreeland, obviously the fashionista, asked, "Where would fashion be without literature?" Do you agree with that statement? What does this really mean?
Well, I think that Diana Vreeland was somebody who was really ahead of her time, and she sort of understood that fashion feeds off of original and interesting ideas and different ways of articulating the world around us. So I think what she understood was that there was this real symbiotic relationship between fashion and literature. And what we've seen since then, I think, is more and more how designers are influenced and intrigued by what goes on in the world of literature, and they're really motivated and inspired by what they find there.
And well, you know, when you say that,
talking about.
Well, it really blows me away when Joan Didion, how old was she when in 2015 she became the face of Celine, you know, the great couture fashion house? I mean, good Lord.
Yeah. I mean, well, obviously she was in her advanced years, but obviously she was chosen by, you know, one of the most sort of revered fashion houses in Paris, by one of the cutting edge Phoebe Philo, who's the designer there, because she recognized this sort of amazing style that she had even in her advanced years. And she's always been a style icon, and I think it's very satisfying to see that, you know, a slightly older woman can still be inspiring to all different generations of fashionista, if you like.
God for that.
Absolutely. And I think, with Celine, they really kind of pinpointed and crystallized this sort of relationship between fashion and literature and why, you know, sort of exemplified the sort of interest that there is. And Joan Didion, obviously, with the cover shot that I used with my book by Julian Wasser, it's just such an iconic image of her in the 70s. And she's sort of got this kind of amazing, effortless style that I think really, really speaks to women even now. You know, just a very sort of understated, cool look. And that's obviously something that's inspired designers as well.
You know, that's interesting because designers connected with Didion because she's an original and they're always trolling for originals. They want an original look for their own brand. And who better to do that than someone who is an original themselves, which is kind of cool. You know, in your book, which I can't even tell you how fabulous this book is. This is going to be a keeper
forever.
Thank
you so much. I'm really pleased you like it.
Oh my gosh, I just absolutely go crazy over it. You know, again, I'm highly biased because I also am a writer, actually in the process of writing my next book. And so I'm kind of deep into it. I'm kind of laughing, saying, good Lord, what do I wear? And in a way, it made me laugh a little bit. I'm trying to understand how all this comes together because I have my own, you know, brand, as it were, branded look. And the twist for someone like myself is more sporty. I'm an athlete, a triathlete, etc. So when I'm riding in my running shorts and I'm running, you know, and I'm riding in my, you know, like a sleeveless something if it's warm outside or back and forth. I'm always kind of wearing what we now call kind of a combination of athletic and leisure wear. And so I suppose that should be my own little brand. And then I look at,
absolutely. And you know, that would say to me, you know, that you're, you know, very focused, very dedicated, hardworking. I think everything that you put on, whether you think it or not, really reveals something about your character. And I think that's really true. You know, some writers have said to me, oh, well, I only ever wear my pajamas when I'm writing. But, you know, even the kind of pajamas you put on still say something.
You know,
about
it's so
you.
Funny. I tried the pajama thing, didn't work. Just, you know, for me, the pajama thing meant go to bed. I mean, I just couldn't get that out of my brain, you know. It's like, go to bed. I don't want to be in bed. I'm writing already. And at the same time,
you're up and running, aren't you? You're up and running. You're writing. You're focused. You're ready. You know, you're kind of on it. And I think that because I do sometimes write in my running kit as well, you know, but it's inefficient. It kind of lends itself to a sort of efficient personality, I would say.
Well, you know, so that makes me feel better already. You know, I think that there's been a stereotypic look for a rider, and classically it was a guy. And classically, the guy would have a little, you know, glass of alcohol on his writing desk and obviously an ashtray that was, you know, overfilled with cigarettes. And, you know, he's got hair that's kind of a bit long and scraggly, or at least he looks like he's really hassled and anxious and freaked out. And he's riding, you know, like a tormented rider kind of type.
Yes.
And yet, you know, I'm sure there are plenty of those in your book, but at the same time, I'm also looking at all these other writers who led a very different life, didn't smoke, didn't do the drinking thing, and just sort of, you know, let it rip. How about George Sand, you know, someone I've already, you know, known about for so many years. Beautiful quotes here. Here's one from her. Which of us has not some sorrow to dull or some yoke to cast off? And then vanity is the most despotic and iniquitous of masters. And I can never be the slave of my own vices. How about George Sand? Wow, that was a wild
amazing.
One.
Yeah, such an amazing woman. And just so, I mean, when it comes to the way that she lived her life, she was incredibly independent. She did what she wanted and she wore what she wanted. And that was, you know, something that was quite, you know, quite brave at the time, you know, in the sort of the mid-19th century in Paris. It wasn't something that every woman would do. And I think that when you look at the pictures that I've managed to find and use in the book, you can kind of see what sort of strong, individualistic type of woman that she was. And that comes through with those quotes that you've just read. And also with the clothes that she wore. She's an amazingly strong role model, I think. And she was living and doing her thing, you know, back in the mid-19th century, which I think is quite, as I said, quite brave and interesting.
Huh,
and
what about
boys' clothes as well, if she felt like it.
Yeah, I know. Well, hell, look at that name, George Sand, right?
Yeah.
What about Maya Angelou and the clothes she wore?
Maya Angelou is one of my absolute favorites. And, you know, she, I think that the thing that attracts me the most about her, apart from her writing, which is just incredible, obviously, but she expected the best in people, and she sort of dressed to sort of, you know, feel good about herself and to present herself to the world like she was kind of ready for action. She was very, you know, all her words are sort of very kind of generous and forgiving, and she just, you know, presented herself in the kind of best possible way to the world, despite all the things that she might have, you know, gone through in her life. And, you know, with the book, her memoir, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, when I read that, it sort of, you know, I always feel like my heart is breaking a little bit when she talks about being dressed up in a kind of dress to go to church in, and then she sort of looks down and she has this epiphany and she realizes that she's wearing a hand-me-down, and, you know, actually, you know, she wanted to look like a princess, but she looks down and she realizes she's wearing a sort of kind of quite a old, tattered hand-me-down dress that's been patched up. And you know, that's the memoir, that's part of her life. And I think that, you know, her dignity and her amazing sort of, you know, talent as a writer and then just as a person, you know, she really kind of rose to the challenge of life. And, you know, and as a result, you know, that, you know, when she's sort of out in public, she was always sort of looking beautiful, looking really chic, just looking always amazing, because that was kind of, you know, it enhanced her psyche, it made her feel better. And she sort of, you know, it was a respect for the people around her as well. Do you know what I mean? And I just love that about her so much.
Well, you know, the quote you use in the book for Maya Angelou was the quote she gave in 1993. This was from Wouldn't Take Nothing for My Journey Now. And the quote is this.
Yeah.
Seek the fashion which truly fits and befits you. You will always be in fashion if you are true to yourself, and only if you are true to yourself. And so, you know, when you look at what's going on today in fashion, sometimes you just have to scratch your head, because you want to sit down and say, instead of just looking robot-like the next person, what really speaks to who you are? You know, are you a rebel? Are you, you know, what are you? And yet at the same time, we look at someone like Sylvia Plath. Now, you know, as you wrote so, you know, beautifully, here's a woman who, you know, was dressed very prim and proper, but it really, you know, sort of deflected off her, because it, in a way, it was her warp shield against the world, allowing her to keep her tormented psyche to herself. Is that true?
Well, I mean, when I was looking at all the different authors, I think you're absolutely right. You know, Maya Angelou's quote sort of encapsulates one of the premises of the book, and that's something that I really feel is that people should just feel very brave and happy about what they wear and wear what they want. And when I turn to Sylvia Plath, who's obviously, I think she looks amazing, sort of very preppy and, as you say, very prim, a real sort of, you know, sort of retro, the clothes she wore is very appealing to a sort of retro customer today, if you like, if you're thinking about it on that level. But then looking further, you know, it was clear that, you know, through her the things that she wore, she was really, as I said in the book, buttoning up, you know, trying to kind of, you know, not show the world that she was unraveling inside. And I think that that's one of the purposes of of clothes, you know, they can kind of conceal and they can also reveal. And looking further along the line, when I was reading the authors again, to researching the book, a lot of the authors, you know, they use clothes within their work as a way of sort of articulating character, if you like. And so, you know, on many levels, clothes sort of work in that way of exposing who you are. And I think that's what all these writers in this book also understood, that, you know, talking about clothes within their work also translates something about the characters that they're trying to form. But going back to Sylvia Plath, I mean, absolutely, you know, there was this kind of real tension between the way she looked and obviously, you know, the tragedy of her emotional state as well. So I think I found that very, very interesting.
Huh. What about Joyce Carol Oates? Everybody knows her. She, you know, obviously is an incredible icon. What I always remember with her, clearly, are her glasses. You know, she's got those glasses going, you know?
Yeah.
And they're very iconic.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, in a way, you know, there's with Joyce Carol Oates, she looks amazing. And with her glasses in the 70s particularly, they kind of almost look as if she's putting on a disguise. But, you know, that's you know, a sort of silly thing to say, really. But I think her glasses are very much her trademark, as you said. And what I found quite interesting was that with lots of the authors that I sort of just quickly spotlit, you know, and talked about their glasses, you know, with fashion now, you know, glasses are such a big accessory, you know, it's such a kind of geeky thing, you know, it's got such a geeky heritage, but actually it's a real fashion accessory as well. And, you know, all of these, Joyce Carol Oates, for example, you know, she needs to wear glasses, but the irony is that, you know, her look is very much a kind of cool, geeky fashion look as well. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, inadvertently, so many of these authors sort of influence fashion in so many different ways. And I think glasses is, you know, one of these kind of accessories that really, you know, very much part of a fashion house now. But historically, it's, you know, a signature of a kind of nerdy geek in a way, you know, a writer or somebody squirreled away doing something sort of academic. And I found that quite interesting as well.
Fascinating. And what about Toni Morrison? Here's another name that so many people recognize.
Yes.
What about her sense of, you know, style as she went out there, you know, doing her extraordinary work?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, with Toni Morrison, again, it just goes back to, I think, a kind of bravery to be and look exactly how you want and not kind of conform, just have a dignity about who you are. And you know, whatever signature you feel is yours, to adopt it and to kind of go with it. And so, you know, very much so with Toni Morrison, you know, when you look at her, you can kind of see her hair is a real sort of powerful cultural part of her identity. But also, you know, they're very elegant and very beautiful. And she said, you know, I'm not you know, anybody other than myself. And so she's not kind of appropriating anything particularly, but she's kind of just translating how she is in her being, if you like, through the clothes that she wears, and also, you know, particularly her hair, for example. She said, there's a quote in the book which says, I'm not a stereotype, and I think that's absolutely right. She's not a stereotype. She's exactly who she is, and she's brave and dignified and gorgeous as well with it. And I think all of the authors in the book, you know, they were, as you pointed out, you know, when we started talking about this, you know, they're all originals. They're all got their own identity. The majority of them lived and worked and are living and working now, but lots of them that aren't with us anymore, you know, they didn't live in a world where social media existed or there was Instagram. Or if you're vaguely in the public eye, you get a stylist. You know, none of these authors had stylists. So, you know, whatever they wore, they chose themselves. They wanted to wear themselves, and they felt happy to put them on and show who they were with it. So I think Toni Morrison is very much exemplifies that sort of sentiment, if you like.
Wow. You know, now let's flash forward. Here we are in the 21st century, right? And so many writers today, well, writing's taken on kind of a whole new world, right? So you can publish on Amazon, you can have your own ebook, kind of get out there, do your thing. At the same time, a lot of writers are showing up on YouTube and multiple social media platforms. And, you know, they're young, older, every single age, the full spectrum. And instead of just experiencing them through their words, now you've got this whole explosion of exposure. Everything from podcast to video to, you know, it goes on and on, in addition to the word. And guess what? The word is even different. We now don't just have hardcover and paperback. We have Kindle. We have Audible books. So we listen to the ebooks, etc. And so writers have taken on deeper and deeper dimensions. And I really think that that whole how you garb yourself throughout all of this is so terribly important as a piece of who you are as a brand, especially today with hyperexposure.
No,
what do you think of that?
Well, part of the reason, you know, the idea to do the book really came from even when I was growing up, and this is pre-internet, obviously, but I was always, all the authors that I read, I was always really interested in not just their books, but them themselves as well. And it seemed to me that, you know, I'd get another chapter almost. You know, when you're reading a really great book, and I don't know about you, but when I get to the end, I never want to finish it. I want it to last for a bit longer. I want another chapter or something. But so when I was reading my favourite authors when I was growing up, learning about the authors after I read their book kind of gave me an extra chapter, if you like, to their stories. And I just feel that, you know, now, as you say, with this kind of the whole sort of multimedia experience that literature is enjoying now, it just gives the consumer some extra stuff to know about your favorite authors. And that, for me, really thrilling, because I always want to know a bit more about character and who people are and their own stories. So I just think it's great. And, you know, it's a real lovely experience to have, I think. I mean, I'm all for it, yeah.
Oh, I love it. And, you know, you ended the book with Tom Wolfe.
Yes.
Who obviously everyone knows and was an extraordinary writer. And this was something about Radical Chic, that evening at Lenny's. And this is in Wolfe's 1970 article for New York Magazine. And he satirizes the elegance of Park Avenue with a feature documenting a party given by the conductor Leonard Bernstein for his well-heeled friends in aid of the Black Panther cause. The minutiae of the moment centers on what is being worn. Here it comes. I loved this, and we'll end it with this. The Panther women are so lean, so lithe, as they say, with tight pants and Yoruba-style headdresses, almost like turbans, as if they'd stepped out of the pages of Vogue, although no doubt Vogue got it from them. What does one wear to one of these parties for the Panthers, or the Young Lords, or the Grape Workers? What does a woman wear? Obviously, one does not want to wear something frivolously and pompously expensive. On the other hand, one does not want to arrive poor-mouthing it in some outrageous turtleneck and West 8th Street bell jean combination, as if one is funky and of the people. I'm sorry, I just laughed my head off with that, because he did get satire down to a fine science. I just love this. Everyone out there, we have been talking to Terry Newman. She is the author of an extremely unique book. And boy, if you're a writer, you better get on out there and check this out. Legendary Authors, and the clothes they wore. And again, it was written by Terry Newman, and her website is at the University for the Creative Arts in Epsom, England. Oh, I just love this. This has been a terrific segment. I learned so much, and as I sit here writing, you know, wearing my sports clothes, I'll feel better because you said I'm focused and ready to work hard.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Terry.
Such a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you very much.
Awesome. And everyone out there, remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please just take a moment and rate and review us because I read these and boy, do I learn a lot of things. All right. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. So follow me on Twitter at PamPeekMD. And you can also check out our Her show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening and stay well.